using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong Trash Bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad Force Flex were sold head to head. So you'll be
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to the Influence Change at Work show for Wednesday, October 28th, 2015. I'm your host, Heather Stegel, coming to you live from Atlanta, Georgia, as I do once a month on Blog Talk Radio. This show is one of the many ways I help equip individuals and teams to influence change at Enclaria. Today, my guest is Rick Maurer, who returns to the show to discuss how to move people from being grumblers to allies and how to gain support for change with the Energy Bar, a tool he's going to tell us about. Rick is the author of Beyond the Wall of Resistance, which was the topic of our first interview. Actually, now it's been a few years, I think. So I encourage you to go and search either at the Enclaria website or on iTunes. You can find that episode. It was a great episode. For the last 20 years, Rick has worked with leaders on ways to build support for their ideas, including major changes. His opinion has been sought by NBC Nightly News, CNBC, USA Today, and many other media outlets. And, by the way, he is a part-time jazz musician as well. Rick, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Heather. It's really good to be here.
So we're talking today about gaining support for change. And so why don't we just start there before we get to the energy bar? You know, what does support look like, and whose support do you need when you're trying to implement changes?
Huh, good. Good questions. Support is not a touchy-feely thing. Support is sort of the lifeblood, the energy. So if you said, I need people to be engaged, I need people to volunteer to take on things, I need them to say yes when I request more funding, all of that I see as support. One place I work with that has a military background, they'll talk about providing air cover. In other words, somebody's starting a project, but they know somebody senior is going to protect it. So all of that I would consider support.
Okay, so is it more about things that people do versus attitudes, would you say?
It is. The attitudes are there under the surface, but it's often, how that attitude turns into some action. And it could be at the lowest possible level is that when you're talking, they're not checking their smartphones. even that kind of thing,
yeah.
it can really make a difference. But generally, it's if I need your support, I need you to say yes to something or go to bat or give me some time on the agenda for your staff meeting next week, things like that have action implied in them.
Okay, so really tactical stuff.
Yes.
Okay, great. So you developed a tool called the Energy Bar. So why don't you talk a little bit about what that is and how does it work?
Sure. A study was done a number of years ago asking what's the biggest reason for failure of change in organizations. And the overwhelming answer by CIOs, by the way, chief information officers, wasn't technology related. It was resistance, a very human thing. And so with in terms of energy, you've got basically two choices. Either people can resist what you're doing or they can support it. And they could support it in big ways or little ways. They could resist it in little ways or big ways. And all of my work has been around how do you build support? How do you either avoid resistance or work with it? And about a year ago, I was working with a client, and they know my stuff. I have this cycle of change that I use, and they're talking about some work going on, and they're just getting all tied up in the language. And I said, stop. And these were a bunch of scientists. And I said, look, forget about all these words that I put on this cycle. The energy is either gone this way or it's gone that way. And this one nuclear physicist said, oh, I like that. And, you know, and it was really simple, and it changed the meeting. And the next week, I was working in headquarters at a large nonprofit, and they were talking about all these stakeholders and this and this and this. And I just got up on the whiteboard, and I drew a horizontal line. And I said, okay, so imagine on the right side of the line is support, and on the left side is resistance. So where's that stakeholder? And they go, oh, they're right here. Where do you need them to be? And they go, oh, right over here. And I haven't even put words to this thing yet, but they're already using it because they're starting to see where there are gaps and where there are matches. And a little bit later, some other people came into the meeting, and one of my clients turned to me and said, Rick, would you mind if I taught that energy bar? It didn't even have a name at that point. I didn't have words for it at that point. And here he is teaching it. And so I thought, okay, I'm on to something. So basically what I did, here's what the energy bar is that energy is always there. Your listeners right now either are sort of leaning in listening, or they're leaning away and they're multitasking or moving on to something else. But the energy is always there, working for us or against us. And so if your listeners just think of a horizontal line, and far to the right would be strong support, and way far to the left would be strong opposition or resistance. And then there are little points along the way, and I'll describe those, you know, as we go along. But basically, what you need to know is, what level of energy do I need from this person? And so let's say that I'm working with somebody named Heather, just to pick a name out of the blue, and I need Heather to be an ally. I need her to be a strong supporter, you know, to really go to bat for this thing, to be a champion and that. And so I put an X way up there on the right, and I go, okay, where do I think her energy is today with regard to that? And now I go way over onto the left side, and let's say, yeah, she's somewhere on that resistance side, probably kind of at a grumbling stage. No, so now I see this gap between where Heather's energy is today and where I need it to be, and I go, that's where my work is. Mm-hmm. And often what I find in organizations, they don't do that kind of really simple due diligence, and so they'll make all these presentations, they'll do all kinds of stuff, assuming that it's going to help, you know, move things along and get people excited, but they have no idea where people are today. And so their tactics often, they're just wasting their time. You know, they're giving more information when people don't need more information. What they need to do is find out, are you trustworthy? You know, things like that.
Right. Well, so you have ally on one side, and you have grumbler is on the other side. So what are the in-between stages?
Yeah.
Or, you know, what would you call those?
Okay, so let's start way at the far left side. The way far left, the end of that line, would be opposition. I mean, these people are going to work against you. So I'm going to go out on strike if you do that kind of thing. Or I'm going to fight you. Up the scale, let's say a couple clicks, would be a grumbler. And these people aren't doing anything to get in the way, but they're like static on the AM radio dial. If your listeners don't know what AM radio is, just ask anybody with white hair in their office. You know, they can tell you. You know, but I love to listen to baseball games, and for some reason, the games around here often are broadcast on AM radio, and you'll be driving, and you get all this static, but you still want to hear the game, so you're listening and listening, but finally you just give up. It gets so bad. Well, that happens in meetings where people are going, oh no, she's talking about it again. You know, that kind of thing. Then, as you get closer to the center of the scale, you have people just aren't interested. They hear you talking, but it just doesn't seem to relate to them. Yeah, I know they're talking about the importance of not smoking and not doing this and that, but that doesn't apply to me. I'm different. You know, so they're just not connecting the dots for themselves. So that would all be on what you might call the resistance side, but as you can see, it's a sliding scale. As you cross the middle, I don't really think there's a neutral spot. I think we're always either leaning a little one way or the other. But as we start to get on the support side, it's I'm interested. So you're talking about it, and I'm not really willing to go do anything yet, but I'm interested in what you have to say. So I'm leaning in. I'm nodding my head. You know, that my action hasn't turned into anything terribly tangible yet, but you got my attention. The next level of support is you're willing. So I think of this as like dating, that you might be willing to go out for coffee with this person, but you're not ready to talk about marriage. You know, but going out for coffee, that's okay. So you're willing to do something. Like, yeah, you'd be willing to, you know, give part of your staff meeting to work on blah, 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 blah. Yeah, you'd be willing to volunteer to be on a committee that is only going to take 2 weeks, that sort of thing. And then on the far right side is a strong supporter. And this is somebody you need to be a champion. You need this person, you know, that there's just no doubt that this person is 100% behind it. And that man or woman is looking for opportunities to make it a success. And so that's the energy bar.
Great. Well, it's funny because I have a very similar tool that I use that's as part of the Irresistible Change Guide that mm-hmm. it's got the horizontal line. It also has degrees of support, but I have five and you have six.
Well, there you go.
They're very similar. So, and I usually use it in the context of gaining support from leaders, identifying the leadership support that you need. So it's just very interesting how independently we created something very similar.
Yeah.
To achieve a similar result. But I've got just really quickly. I've got opposed on one side, and then I have neutral, which is sort of you're indifferent. It sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
Buy-in would be you're interested.
Yeah.
And commitment would be willing, and then ownership.
Yeah.
Is your allies. So it's quite similar, actually.
No, it is. It really is. Well, you know what I'm curious about your experience is what I've liked about it is that it's so simple that it's really easy for people to engage with it. And then if they want to know theory and they want to know why would people resist and all that, that's you can go much, much further. But it takes no time at all. Yeah.
Well, and simple tools are usually best, right? At least for gaining understanding and clarity of what you're up against. And then the actual moving people is the hard part.
That's true. I have two feelings about it. First of all, I really like simple tools. I don't like simplistic tools. And I remember a book that came out about leadership, and I won't name it, but it was very popular. And basically, they're saying, we've got the secret to good leadership. And it was basically, if I was writing a book on health and I said, the secret of good health is flossing, I mean, you could go, well, okay, sure, I can't argue with you, but maybe there's more to it than that. And I sometimes worry about, and I actually worried when I started doing this energy bar, would it be seen as too simplistic? And I haven't gotten that feedback yet. I mean, people seem to engage and go, oh, yeah, and then you could start to have some pretty cool conversations.
Yeah, that's the whole point is to get to a place where you can have a conversation about what you really need to talk about.
Right? Yes.
So would you say that everyone needs to be an ally when you're trying to implement change, or is it okay for some people to be somewhere in the middle?
I think it's fine for people to be in the middle. Now, let me use my language because I think it's fine for people just to be interested. Because they're not going to be working against you. Once you tip over to that other side where I have indifference, and it really doesn't make much difference what words you use, now you've got energy starting to move away from you, and that's where it's dangerous. But, you know, there are projects going on in an organization that if some people just go along with it, that's fine. In fact, and they're perfectly happy to just let you go ahead and do that because they never use the software system in their work anyhow, so sure, do what you need to do. I think we waste a lot of effort in trying to create strong allies when we don't need them. I know that seems like an odd thing to say, but I think we may ramp up way too much energy when we really don't need that or expect that from some of the stakeholders.
Yeah. There's some level of us that wants to have everybody on our side. Like you say, allies, but at the same time, it really, going back to your initial statement that support is all about what you do, then, you know, you don't need everybody in the organization to be actively trying to own it, and because that can cause its own chaos.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, I'm working right now, I mean, even this morning, on this assessment tool, and one of the things is, what if you only need a little bit of support? Let's say there are six dots on this scale, and so I just need the person to, or the group to be a four, but they're likely to be a six. They're going to give me more support than I need. What do I do about that? In some cases, I might rejoice and go, wow, this is my lucky day. Other times I go, oh, yeah. And what that means is they're going to meddle, they're going to micromanage, they're going to take credit. You know, so I have to manage it the other way. So, by the way, I think it's risky when too many people are over on the resistant side, because it can really drain energy. And I remember a number of years ago, I was touring a plant that made cell phones, and they had a huge quality improvement program going on that was grassroots, and it really made a huge difference for them. And so I was out on the floor interviewing people, and I said, so not 100% of the people don't buy this, do they? And one of the hourly workers said, oh, no. He said, but about 95% do. And I said, what about the other 5%? And he said, we ignore them. He said, they're welcome to join us, but if we put our attention on the 5%, we would be wasting our time and taking energy away from the work that needs to happen. And I remember Tom Peters writing and using almost exactly those same numbers. You know, now it depends who that 5% is. If the 5% is the CEO and CFO, that's very different. So,
right. Then you have a problem.
You do, yeah.
Yeah. So then how do you move people along the energy bar?
Yeah. Well, the first thing is you've got to know why they're where they are today. So, you know, the title of our talk is From Grumblers to Allies. So let's say I got a pretty good sense that group or that individual are going to grumble. You know, maybe they're grumbling already, like, there they go again, and it's the flavor of the month, all that kind of stuff. That's one thing to know, and it's important to know that, but you've got to get under the surface and go, but why? Why are they grumbling? And in my model of resistance and support, which underlies this entire energy bar, I think there are three things. And when it's resistance, it's I don't get it. In other words, I don't understand what you're talking about. Or I don't like it. There's something about this idea, this project, whatever it is, that scares me. I could lose my job, I could lose face, I could, you know, it's going to take me away from the projects I love doing, whatever it might be. But it's an emotional, personal emotional thing. So now I have, I don't get it, I don't like it. And the third one is, I don't like you, which really means I don't trust you or the people you represent to lead something like this. So when people are grumbling, it's good to know that, but you got to know, why are they grumbling? Is it because this just doesn't make sense to them, that there's something about it that scares them, or there's something about you that scares them? Then, once you know that, you can say, all right, as I'm looking at this sobering list, what can I do with that, and how can I begin to turn it around? And I'll be glad to give you an example if you like, but I don't want to babble too much without breathing.
No, sure, go ahead and give me an example.
Okay, well, all right, so first time I ever thought of doing it this way, I was helping out. There was a thing called business process reengineering. It was very, very controversial back in the 90s when it was popular, and controversial for good reason. It really was, it was devastating for a lot of places. Anyway, this one company had a planning group, and they were working on business process reengineering, and the consultant who was helping the planning group, invited me in to teach my stuff on, you know, change and resistance. And somebody in the group said, Rick, next week the bomb is going to drop. I mean, that's a pretty horrible image. And other people going, yeah, he's right. What should we do? Well, at this point, I don't know any more about this than you know, you or your listeners know right now. You know, and I said, what do you mean the bomb is going to drop? And people are going, oh, it's going to be awful. There's going to be blood everywhere. I mean, just terrible stuff. And I said, stop. I said, what is happening next week? And they said, we're holding a meeting. And I said, what do you mean you're holding a meeting? I said, it's an all-day meeting. And I said, yeah. And they said, It's the first time we roll out a draft of the plan to key stakeholders. Oh, it's going to be terrible. What should we do? And once again, I still didn't know what to do with this. I mean, I knew why they were worried now. But I said, okay, so I've got to figure out kind of what's under the surface. And I said, look, there's about 15 people. I said, imagine, each one of you imagine that you're one of those people coming to the meeting. What's going to be on your mind? And people started telling me. I started writing it down on a flip chart. And I knew what to do with it. And so I said, all right, so I've already taught you about those three levels. I don't get it. I don't like it. I don't like you. Let me use the green marker. Which of these are I don't get it, where people just don't understand or have enough information? Then I underline. I said, which of these have to do with emotional responses, you know, fear-based or concern? And I said, which of these have to do with a lack of trust in you or the people you represent? So now we got, it's all color-coded, three different colors. And somebody said, oh, that's why the bomb is going to drop. And everybody looked at him, including my fellow consultant and me. And he said, we designed that eight-hour meeting to deal with facts and figures, timelines, deliverables, level one stuff, information. He said, but they're coming. He said, maybe 10% of what's on that list is information-based. Everything else is either emotional or lack of trust. No wonder we're going to get so much resistance. No wonder we're worried. And here's what they did brilliantly. Just based on that, they said, could we take the next hour and redesign that meeting? And we said, sure. And they just turned their chairs around. It didn't call on us for the whole hour and redesigned the meeting so that it really addressed a lot of the things that were probably on people's minds that were scaring them, and also tried to create a meeting where people might actually start to trust this planning group more than they had before. Like, hey, you know, and I checked the meeting they held then, what apparently went brilliantly. I mean, they got a lot of support.
Great. Well, and do you see people jump from grumblers to allies, or do people kind of have to gradually move up the scale?
Both can happen. I mean, some people, if you make such a convincing case and they go, whoa, she's serious, we better do this, they really can make that huge jump. In other cases, it may be pretty entrenched, like there's an old Groucho Marx song where he sings, whatever it is, I'm against it. You know, if you've got a few of those people around, may take a while. So maybe what you want to do is just try to get them up so that they're interested in what you have to say. They don't have to make a commitment. They don't have to go out on a date. They just have to be interested. And then you can start to move on up into the levels of support that you might like. But it's sometimes helpful just to be more gradual, unless you can have some big dramatic thing that can get people to go, whoa, I see the error of my ways.
Well, and what do you do about people who are just saying, over my dead body?
You know, you could make arrangements with some local funeral home to get a discount policy, I guess. People are taking notes like, oh, yeah.
I need to put a disclaimer in here at this point. We are not actually advocating
We are joking. This Rick Maurer, who I never met before, I'm kidding about that. Well, first of all, the serious answer is it depends on who that person is. If that person that is over my dead body is so key to the success of this, you can't afford to just say, well, that's life. I mean, you've either got to go, how can I build support with this person or this group? Or I've got to say, I got to give up because I can't do it. In other instances, you might like to have the people on board, but, you know, you can survive if they're not there. And so first thing is you've just got to know where is that person that's saying, and do they have influence, and what difference is it going to make if they're not with you? And it's not that I encourage my clients to ignore people, but to treat people with respect and also go, you know, but this is as far as I can go.
Yeah. So I'm curious because it seems like, so you have the spectrum. On one side you have resistance, and on the other side you have support. But it seems like there might still be some resistance even on the right-hand side. Like, you know, you've got somebody who's interested, but they just can't make the leap.
Oh, right.
So I was just curious about your experience with that.
Oh, yeah. No, that's when it's all on the right side, the more positive side, it's sometimes a little harder to see because everything is kind of positive. But one of the things that I suggest to clients is I go, okay, so they're at a four, they're interested, but they're not really willing to do much of anything. The first thing you need to do is say, so why are they even interested? What is it about what you're talking about that's getting their attention? Because something's making them interested. Mm-hmm. And if you know that, then you have an opportunity to say, is there any way that this project or whatever it is I'm working on, that there can be a link so that they can go, oh, I really want to be part of that. That's important to me. But the first thing you've got to find out, so what is it? How are they connecting the dots? Why are they even saying, hey, that's a good idea, you know, keep me in the loop? I really want to know that. The second thing is, if they're willing to do little things but nothing big, that may be okay, but what I would do is when I give them the little things, I want to make sure those little things I'm asking them to do really matter. Like, I wouldn't waste that goodwill on having them come to an all-hands meeting and sit in the room while people talk at them for 8 hours. That would be a waste of goodwill and energy. But if I could get them to say yes to some small part of a project that was important to them, that would make a difference. I remember a quality officer on an Air Force base, the chief enlisted guy was absolutely against what he did. But they really started to build a relationship over time. And every once in a while, the officer, Brian McGraw, would say to the chief master sergeant, hey, do you know, and he would be kind of kidding at this, because, hey, did you know that thing that you just did so well, you might call that quality improvement. And they would start playing around with it. And the guy became a huge supporter for him. But what Brian did brilliantly is he allowed him to take time to do it. He built the relationship. And then when he asked for something, it was always something that he thought would be valuable to that top enlisted guy.
Great. So I'm curious also, so this is a tool that when the way we're talking about it is an assessment of other people. So I'm wondering if you ever would advocate for using this as a self-assessment tool for people, or say, you know, hand it out at a meeting and say, hey, where do you think you are?
Well, actually, yeah. As a matter of fact, I see it, and I realize I may not be explaining it well, and so I need to be clear about it. It's when I'm assessing where my relationship is with this mythical Heather, I'm now part of that equation, and I have to go, she is either supporting or resisting Rick Maurer. You know, that I'm already part of that, and I have to understand that if she's resisting me, and this group over here, and that group, and this person up there, that maybe it's me, and I better start looking at that. But in a different court, I have a friend who's the head of the board of a nonprofit, and he said, every year we talk about the same stuff, what's going to be good for our members, and we never do anything on some of these. He said, so when I became president, he said, I used the energy bar, and I said, all right, so here are the things every year we say this is important, and we don't do anything. So I'd like each of us, I'm going to call these off one at a time, and whatever the issue is, issue A, everybody stand here, where's your energy with regard to that issue? And he said, we started to have a different kind of conversation. So we say we're interested in it, but nobody's willing to do any work on it. So what are we going to do about that?
Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
Great. So we're near the end of our time here. So where can people learn more if they want to know more?
Well, best place is my website, which is rickmaurer.com, and Maurer is M-A-U-R-E-R, so just rickmaurer.com. And there's the energy bar is there. There's a bunch of free tools. There's some videos and all kinds of stuff. So
great. And when I post the blog with the recording that people might be listening to right this moment, there will be a link on that blog post that also has a link to or the link will be to a 3-minute video that you put together describing what the energy bar is and how to use it. So if they want to see it in action, they can watch that video as well.
Oh, great. Good.
Great. Well, Rick, thanks so much for being here. I appreciate your time and you're explaining the energy bar to us.
Oh, you're welcome. This is a real pleasure, Heather.
Great.
Okay.
And coming up next month on Thursday, November 19th, Aronde Creighton shares why and how to lean into authentic leadership. Thank you so much for listening to the Influence Change at Work show. If you'd like to find more resources to help you influence change in your organization, including individual coaching, team workshops, and upcoming training events, please visit inclaria.com. And while you're there, sign up for my monthly newsletter and receive 12 free templates from my change management toolkit, the Irresistible Change Guide. Until next time, take care and best wishes for your change initiative.
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
There are best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head to head. So you'll be.
Happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer odor control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
There are best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head to head. So you'll be.
Happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer odor control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty! Dude!